Finished around 1760, here during the Revolution is a 45 by 35 foot home with four rooms on each of two floors, according to its third occupant, Governor Tryon. 4 months after taking the oath of office in April 1765, Tryon writes someone, "As you are acquainted with Mrs. Tryon's neatness, you will not wonder that we have been pestered with scouring of chambers, whitewashings of ceilings, plasterer's work, and painting the house inside and out. There are 10-foot-wide porches all the way around both stories, with 4-foot-high railings, which is a great security for my little girl," Tryon says. In the back left corner of the lower porch is a privy above a downsloping tunnel to the river, a rare colonial sewer. The first floor is 5 feet off the ground, though there is a cellar, which you see today. Nearby to the left are a stable, coach house, and other outbuildings. In the garden are various fruit trees, Tryon says, apple, fig, nectarine, peach, and plum. Between the house and the river, canals are cut into the marsh to drain it for rice paddies. Probably where the walkway to the house is now, in colonial times, a tree-lined lane extends straight from the front door through farm fields on both sides, continuing to the road from Wilmington. The Revolutionary War history of Brunswick Town started here, and in one sense, that of all the colonies. In 1766, 7 years before the famous Boston Tea Party, 1,000 people led by the area Sons of Liberty arrive at this spot to protest the Stamp Act. This law by the British Parliament said all printed materials in North America had to carry a government stamp, bought with a tax, to help pay off the costs of the French and Indian War. That tax had long existed in England, but previously only colonists' elected assemblies had taxed them. Also, the law said violators could be tried in British Navy courts instead of local courts with juries of their peers. A British vessel stationed off the mouth of the river had seized 3 incoming merchant ships for violating the act. Wilmington refused to supply it. On Monday, February 19, around 150 armed men from the larger crowd surround the house. They trap Governor Tryon and a number of colonial officers inside. They back off when someone they trust confirms he is still on the vessel. The next day, the captain agrees to release the seized ships, but the protesters aren't done. They round up 2 customs officers responsible for enforcing the Stamp Act. Tryon tells in a letter what happens the next morning. Around 10 a.m. on Wednesday, 580 men, most armed, approach the house, stopping about 3 American football fields away. 60 of them, led by Cornelius Harnett, a member of the Provincial Assembly, come here to the door. Harnett asks to speak to the customs officer. Tryon replies, "Mr. Pennington came into my house for refuge. He is a crown officer, and as such I would give him all the protection my roof and the dignity of the character I held in this province could afford him. Mr. Harnett hoped I would let him go, as the people were determined to take him out of the house if he should be longer detained. An insult, he said, they wished to avoid offering to me." Tryon points out this would not add much insult after they had already surrounded his house, making me, in effect, a prisoner. Pennington tells Tryon he will go, but Tryon convinces him, over Harnett's objection, to resign first. The 3 customs officers are escorted into town, where they pledge never to enforce the act. Though Virginia had passed resolutions against the act, and Sons of Liberty in northern cities had held angry demonstrations, this was the first armed action directed against Parliament in America. Tryon moved to New Bern in 1770, and William Dry bought the house. 5 years later, Tryon's replacement Josiah Martin fled New Bern for Fort Johnston. Wisely, he bypassed Brunswick Town. When he later hired one of the townsmen as a courier, this messenger proved untrustworthy and promptly handed over his information to the Whigs. The Patriots, that is. The committees of safety in the area order their militia to take back the fort. By Saturday, July 15th, 1775, 500 men have rendezvoused in Brunswick Town, probably right here. They march south to start the American Revolution in North Carolina by burning the fort. The mansion came to the same end. The Virginia Gazette reported in April 1776 that likely church burner Colette set fire to the elegant house of Colonel Dry, destroying therein all the valuable furniture, liquors, etc. It continued, "The town of Brunswick is totally deserted, and the enemy frequently land in small parties to pillage and to carry off enslaved people." Archaeologists found thousands of fragments of wine bottles under the left side porch, plus 158 of Dry's bottle seals, indicating that this was the part of the cellar where the valuable liquors were stored and burned, 300 bottles or more. As noted above, Brunswick had already been surpassed by Wilmington as a port. Though the town was reoccupied, it never recovered and was completely abandoned by war's end. Please continue to the audio clip under Historical Tidbits.